Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. Michelle Perkins is back again. It's a back-to-back series. We talked about hyperkalemia last time. Now we're going to talk about dry drowning. Two totally different topics, but that's what's so great about Michelle. She can talk about anything if you let her. So this time, we're going to talk about... That was meant to be a compliment, by the way. We're going to talk about dry drowning. Ugh.
Yeah, kill me.
So, well, it would hopefully not by dry drowning.
Yeah, seriously. Because
that would be, you know, bogus. So let's talk about why, because I mean, you hear about this all the time, and we're right in the midst of summer right now. So actually we're getting close to the end of the year, which is so perfect for us because we've been talking about this since before summer. And now we're going to release something. So check us out next year. Remember this in the back of your mind, or maybe you live far enough south that this is always an issue for you. But seriously, there's this thing that happens, and we see this a lot, about this quote-unquote dry drowning. So, Michelle, explain this to us.
Yeah, well, stories are everywhere on social media about this. These cases are reported after a child dies at some point after they've had some sort of water-related injury. So the kid's perfectly fine, then drops dead 5 days later. And of course, they're heart-wrenching. They're troubling. They get you where it hurts. And so these stories spread like wildfire. But unfortunately, they're not based on any reality.
And these are very, very emotional ones. I probably should put a link to one of the ones that I saw that my wife sent me. And she already knew my stance on this and why and everything like that, because it's been brought up by ASAP and others before. But It was great to watch it because you could see, but this kid is not the kid that you hear about that the urban legends start basically. So I like I said, I'm going to try and add that in the show notes because it is a very powerful clip and almost got me thinking like, wait, maybe dry drowning is the thing. No. Listen to the whole story and it makes sense again.
Well, right. And the thing is that happens is that when these are reported in the media or you know, fly through social media or what have you, you never see the follow-up. Like you don't see the follow-up that after the autopsy results come back, the kid died from something else. You know, it was nothing to do with their dry drowning, quote unquote. It was due to some other condition or some other underlying problem. And that kind of gets, you know, passed over as a thing. And this myth just continues to perpetuate.
In many ways, it's kind of similar to the myth about you touching fentanyl is going to kill
right.
you. Or, you know, all these officers or other first responders with this, which I mean, I fight this all the time, and we've had previous posts on this as well. It's just the same sort of thing. People, you know, unfortunately, they see the initial reports. They don't get the follow-up where the drug screens were negative, where the toxicology reports are all good. And by the way, this person didn't have anything that made you really think that they needed naloxone to start with.
Right. Exactly. So it's quite a thing.
And it involves kids, which is always kind of its own, you know, fear factor of everything going on.
Oh yeah, feed into that mommy fear. It's a great way to get shares.
Yeah, shares, likes, views, comments, all that good stuff. Things that boost posts quite a bit.
Right.
There are so many different ways to define this. So let's go through what the WHO defines as drowning.
Okay, so the only definition of drowning was put out in 2005, defined drowning as, quote, the process of experiencing respiratory impairment from submersion/immersion in liquid, unquote. That's it. That's all.
And then there's like three subcategories, though,
right? So you have fatal drowning, non-fatal drowning with injury or illness, non-fatal drowning without injury or illness. That's it. There are terms that have no acceptable medical definition or validity, but are still widely tossed about. But those are the only three subcategories. You either drown and die or you drown and don't die.
And so now we get this confusing stuff where we have this quote unquote dry drowning or near drowning or secondary drowning. Can you explain this a little bit?
Sure. Well, dry drowning actually was used as a medical term initially. And it was used to describe what they found on autopsy on the lungs, where someone who drowned didn't have a whole lot of water in their lungs. So they called it dry drowning. But the reason this was the case, I mean, you don't need gallons of water in your lungs to drown, is because likely there was some laryngospasm involved that, you know, disallows lots of large volume of water going in. But the amount of water is irrelevant. It's still drowning.
And then what about near drowning?
That's not a thing. Like I just said before, you either drown and survive or you drown and don't.
There's not a kind of
you sort of drowned.
So what about the secondary delay drowning?
Well, that's what people are using kind of interchangeably with the term dry drowning. And this describes somebody who develops complications after having a drowning episode. Again, there has never been a case of someone dying after a prolonged asymptomatic period.
And again, the focus is on asymptomatic.
Right.
I think that's the big thing we have to remember. Because the videos where they talk about, you know, little Timmy died after he fell in the well. I always pick on Timmy.
I know.
Old Yeller. But anyway, you know, those types of things, Timmy was sick afterwards. He started acting funny. He was having a hard time breathing, you know, or what happens a lot now you read is like overchlorinated pool. They sucked in a bunch of water. So they get this chemical pneumonitis picture as well. But it's not just, oh, you know, little Timmy was running around bouncing, having a great time. Then a week later he dies.
Right. That's just not a thing from something else.
Okay, so how do you actually manage these cases?
Well, basically, anybody that has respiratory symptoms after some sort of instance should be evaluated. We're not talking about like the typical kind of cough spluttering that happens if we get water down the wrong pipe or if you dive wrong. We're talking if they're severely coughing, having prolonged coughing or having confusion or hypoxia or any other symptoms. So, you know, the little kid who goes under in the bathtub and kind of comes up coughing and spluttering and then is done with it, that's not a kid that needs evaluation. But if they're having prolonged stuff, they're acting funny, they're blue, then they definitely need to be looked at. And so typically what you do, I mean, you don't do that much for initial management other than observation, but you need to observe them for a couple hours. And they should get better or worse or kind of declare themselves within just a few hours. And again, you're watching for the severe prolonged coughing, frothing at the nose or mouth, or mental status changes.
And then I like this. This is something you made a note of as well. And this is something that I actually saw about a couple weeks, months, something like that. Sometime relatively recent. I had a kid who came in who mom said he was out in the pool swimming and may have gotten a little bit of water, but was totally fine afterwards. No symptoms at all. And then sometime later that day, much later that day, we're talking about 10, 12 hours later. Oh, now he's got a fever and he doesn't feel well and he's had a little bit of a cough. Guess what? Strep swab him, strep test positive, chest x-ray was totally clean as well. Just went ahead and did that just to make the parents feel better and just make sure there wasn't something else at play there, just make sure I wasn't being wrong. But it's worth noting that if patients are totally fine and then their symptoms develop 8 or more hours out, something else is at play, and to actually look into that. Like I said, in my kid's case, they had strep. So when I actually start digging a little bit more after I calm the parents down and we talk a little bit about the details, then they tell me, well, he's had a little bit of sore throat for the last couple of days, but we didn't think much of it. We got worried after, you know, he maybe took a little bit of water in. And that's all they describe it as, you know, that little cough gag, a little bit of water, that's kind of it sort of thing. But that's what the big concern was, because they saw something on social media about dry drowning. That was it.
Right. And I think the most recent thing that I saw go by as far as the dry drowning thing goes was the kid presented, like, I don't know, it was again, temporally distant from whatever water-related incident he had. He was vomiting. And that was his dry drowning. It was vomiting. It's like, that's not even in the same zip code as drowning pathology. So it's, so if it's 8 or more hours out, you really need to be looking for something else. I mean, if the kid was totally fine before, and then you've got this distant symptoms, you need to be looking for what's causing the distant symptoms and not attribute it to the drowning.
All right. So we have talked plenty about how dry drowning itself is not really a thing. People, again, if they are going to have issues that happen afterwards, it's things that are directly related to the water exposure. It's not drowning. Again, we've talked about what drowning is versus what it's not. And it's not secondary or delayed drowning or dry drowning or any of those types of things. We're using those terms incorrectly. What we're actually talking about is some sort of complication secondary to basically taking in water. And whether that's a pneumonia, an aspiration-type pneumonia, or it's a chemical pneumonitis, or whatever else is going on, that's almost beside the point, because it's worth acknowledging that these are separate entities. So if we recognize that these are separate entities, again, what we're going to focus on, what we're going to assess, is now completely different from the drownings we see or these parents who get concerned about this, because we can explain this a little bit better. But with all that said, Michelle, what should we be focusing on instead?
Prevention. It's felt that about 85% of fatal drownings could have been prevented, and it's one of the leading causes of accidental death in children. And one in five people who actually die from drowning are 14 and under.
Yeah, and this is just way too high of a number, and we can think about all these different things to prevent it. Unfortunately, when this comes out, this isn't that far after there was a major incident near where I live in Branson, Missouri, where there was a duck boat drowning. And so basically these little watercraft that were commonly used in World War II and afterwards and is now used as a commercial thing, a lot of those people who died did not have any sort of life preserver on. And so at least that's what the details are. Obviously, there's still more stuff will come out in the future. But it's just one example of one of the many things you can do to help prevent drownings. So obviously, you want to make sure that people know how to swim. You want to keep a close eye on anyone who's swimming, not just those who are inexperienced. The big thing that I see a lot that drives me nuts are people who are not watching their toddlers and keeping them at a distance, whether that is something that you keep a fence up or you make sure you're always within reach of them. But no matter what, you need to keep a very close eye on the young ones, especially the ones who really do not know how to swim. And then personal flotation devices, you know, really anyone should be wearing it when they're in water that has potential of drowning them, whether it's, you know, high heights or stuff like that. But especially in those who cannot swim or who are weak swimmers, we really need to have those.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you see, I'm one of those people who should just not go to any sort of public pool because I just go completely mental watching some of the quote unquote parenting that is happening. But I mean, they think their kid's fine. You get these little toddlers with these little water wings on. It's just like, oh, little Timmy's not going to drown here. And they're not even, they couldn't reach out and grab if he started to go under. I mean, it just makes, they rely on inadequate devices to keep their kids safe.
These are things that the U.S. Coast Guard, if you're in the United States listening to this, does a really good job about classifying what types of PFDs work for what types of situations and recommended for different ages and weights and sizes, all those types of things. If you are in the United States, when you go and buy any of these types of things, don't get the little useless water wing stuff. Get the things that are properly designed for this. But understand when you go through, even if you put this on your toddler, they are not going to be things that are going to keep them 100% safe. That's you as the parent or guardian or whoever's role to do. This is just something to help assist you when you need them.
Yeah, you have to be able to be in a position to reach out and grab them if anything goes wrong.
All right, so I think we've drowned that one. Wrong wording. So I think we've chosen that one well. But let's talk about the take-home points.
Take-home number one, number two, number three, number four is that dry drowning is not a thing. Because we need to stop using that term. We need to stop using the term as professionals. The media need to stop using it. Stop using that term, along with, quote, near drowning and secondary drowning. We need to get those words out of our lexicon. Because there's never been a case reported or never been a case happen where a totally asymptomatic drowning patient later drops dead from drowning.
And again, the asymptomatic is the big part there. Cannot stress that enough.
Absolutely. Somebody pulled from the water with severe prolonged coughing, confusion, frothing at the nose or mouth, or any sort of behavior changes needs to be evaluated and monitored for 4 or more hours. They will either get better or worse during this time and kind of declare where they're going to go.
And be prepared to actually like get ready to intervene on these patients if it is looking like they're going downhill, whether that's securing their airway or providing positive pressure ventilation or any of those types of things. Just be ready for that.
Right. And basically how you manage them is however you would manage the complication that they have. You'd manage if they have pulmonary edema developed, then you manage it like you'd manage pulmonary edema, et cetera.
And also keeping in mind that these people may need antibiotics if this is an aspiration pneumonia type picture. All those types of things are things that we need to keep in the back of my mind. We're not talking about managing the critical care patient right now. That's kind of its own separate thing. We want to just at least hammer home that there is a difference between this quote unquote dry drowning stuff and then actual complications from a drowning victim.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now that we beat that one enough, I think the last thing is also the most important thing, other than the fact that dry drowning needs to quit being used as a term because it's not the original definition that was designed for it. It's what we're now calling it. And that is that prevention's key, right? It's all about doing that stuff to help ever avoid getting to this situation to begin with.
Absolutely.
Okay, Michelle, 2 out of 2 podcasts. Wonderful work.
Thank you so much.
Lots more to talk about. Hopefully we can get you back soon to talk about tick-borne stuff. You know, that way you'll be ready for next year.
Yeah, why rush things?
Why rush it? No. We'll come up with winter topics like falling on ice in the summer. That'll be great. So that way people will be, we're just getting it early enough so that way it's ready for next year.
Right. Well, I don't know about you, but we see tick-borne stuff well into the fall and early winter here. I don't know if that's the case in your neck of the woods.
Actually, we see tick-borne stuff year-round. It's just, it's more on our radar during the summer.
Right. So we'll still be really topical and on point.
Yes. I just had to give Michelle, this is all my fault, really, because I'm the one who's so busy, I can't meet with Michelle. Michelle is being an adventurer. I'm just working. Okay. So before we go, anything else you want to talk about, Michelle?
No, just thanks for having me on again. It's always a lot of fun.
I enjoy it every single time too. So can you give us the tagline before you go though?
Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.